the SNL Friday Night Speaker Meeting held at Alpha Sale Shopping Center, Room 120 in San Jose, California on January 28, 1994. Tonight's 10-minute speaker is Nicole C. of Colorado Springs, Colorado. The one-hour speaker is Pamela B. of Campbell, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
My name's Nicole. I'm an alcoholic. What it was like for me is I was a pig. I used to drink and use just about anything I can get my hands on. And I stepped into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1985, and I tried to get sober when I was 15 years old. And it was real hard for me because I felt that I was too young, and how could I be an alcoholic? Alcoholics were the bums who were sitting in the streets with a brown bag and dirty clothes and scruffy looking. And I couldn't imagine that I was an alcoholic. I didn't stay around very long, and I went out and drank again, and I came back in 1987, and I stayed around for a year, and it was at the old room at the old Camel High School, and I was sober for about a year and a half, and then I got drunk. I got married and went through a divorce, and it took me out of the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used that as an excuse to go out and drink again. Poor me, look at my life. It's miserable, so I chose to go out and drink. I came back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous again, and I did this several times until last year, January 8th. Quit drinking, and I celebrated a year this January. I used to always use my age as an excuse. Oh, I was just a teenager, and that's what teenagers did, was party and stick needles in their arms, and I didn't have a problem with any of it. So I was going to go out and control and enjoy my drinking, and when I was controlling, I wasn't enjoying, and when I was enjoying, I wasn't controlling. I was miserable. My life today is never been better. I'm living in Colorado Springs, and I miss my home group. I still consider this my home group. I grew up in these rooms. And I have a 5-month-old daughter, and she means the world to me, and I'm able to be sober and be the best mom I can be today. And my life hasn't been better. I've used the excuse a lot of finances, romances, and just about anything that I could use to go out and drink again. And I don't have to have an excuse anymore, because I don't want to go out and drink. I don't want to die. I don't want to get my daughter taken away from me. And I like my life today, and I like who I am today. I like living in my skin today. I don't wish that I was dead today and like I used to. I grew up in psychiatric hospitals and institutions, and that's where my drinking headed me at the end. I ended up in an institution about a year and a half ago, and I don't want to live like that anymore. I've got a good life today, and I still talk to my old sponsor here. Her name's Ramona, and I consider her still my sponsor, and my phone bill could prove that. And I came back. I came to visit for 10 days, and God is just blessing me left and right. And I got to speak tonight for 10 minutes, and that really makes me feel good, because this is my home group, and this is where I belong. And I went to Colorado on June 4th, and been real hard. It's been real hard adjusting. It's been real hard to get out there and become vulnerable with other human beings, other women. And right now I don't have a very good support group, but I do have a sponsor and I do go to meetings twice a week. And it's a lot different there. AA is a lot different there. They're not as happy, it seems, like they are here. We don't clap there and Yahoo and all that stuff that we do here, and I miss it. I did feel like drinking, and I suggest for anybody who is in to go and shoot and pool at a bar or shoot and darts or shuffleboard or what have you in bars to really check your motive. Because I've caught myself in there many of times looking at the beers and looking at the shots and thinking that, well, wouldn't it be nice just to have one? And I know for me I am an alcoholic, therefore I cannot drink or I will die. Sobriety hasn't been easy for me. I had the three top dress stuff in my life. I had a baby, my finances, and I moved all at once. And it's been real difficult. But I have a God today who loves me and who takes care of me. And whenever it seems like whenever I need anything, diapers or food or whatever, it just comes. And I also work with other alcoholics. And that's a big thing. When all else fails, you work with another alcoholic. And it got me real grateful. And I got to key in on a key thing when I was doing that in Colorado was I was 12-stepping this girl. I was calling her every day in Denver. And I'd spend a half an hour a night on the phone with her and read from the big book to her and until she got a flight to where she was going. And she ended up getting loaded because her boyfriend left. And that's an excuse I used to use a lot in order to get loaded, and I don't need to do that today. And I just got real grateful because I thought back and I go, wow, you know, that used to be me. I used to use that as an excuse every time. And one of the biggest things, I know how to get loaded, and I know how to stay sober. And another thing that I have learned through the years is that I had the capability that I was incapable of being honest with myself and others. I used to blame others constantly. It's all their fault. Look what they have done to me, for me. And self-pity just got me drunk, and resentment got me drunk. And I really don't want to live like that anymore. There is a solution. There's a solution in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new here tonight, I suggest you get a sponsor. Like Damien said, there's a temporary sponsor box. You need to get a sponsor. You need to get a book, and you need to read that book and read that book again. It seems like every time I read that book, there's something new in it. And I used to feel really bad and used to beat up on myself for going out all the time. But then I got into the stories in the back of the book, and not a lot of those people stayed sober their first time in. And I know it could be done, and I don't condemn the people that have come in and stayed. I just chose the detour route, and it was real bumpy and real hard, and it hurt a lot. And it's hard right now because I'm getting distracted. I hear my daughter over there playing. And she's my life. And that's God right there, the beauty of a child. And I had a hard time with that too, and I was going to use her colic as an excuse to go out and drink because she would scream for 2.5 months from 5 o'clock in the evening till 11:30 or 2 in the morning. And it's very, very difficult for me, and I wanted to take just one drink just to take the edge off. And I didn't have to do that. I got to sit there and pray and cry and pray and and we made it through it. And I'm coming back to visit, and there's a lot of new faces in this room, and that's scary too. And I don't want to be a statistic. I don't want to be someone who comes in and goes out and dies. I want to be planted in a chair here, giving of myself and working with others and being an active member of my group, and I want to be an active member of society. I can do that today. I can do anything that I need to do or want to do in my life because I've got God. And I had a hard time with the concept of God, too, when I first got here. I only had an emergency God who I'd call on when I was in a jam. Please get me out of this one, and I'll never do it again. And that didn't seem to work either. And I came in here, and I worked with a lot of people on getting a concept of God. And now, for me, he just is. And I don't try to complicate it or make my life difficult. Because I wanted to see something happen. I wanted that burning bush. I wanted the miracle. And I sat around waiting for it forever. And I also use that as an excuse to go out and drink. I was sitting at a bar with a drink and go, okay, God, if you don't want me to drink, show me. Show me you don't want me to drink. And nothing happened. So I drank. So if you're new, just hold on. You'll make it through it. You can make it through anything in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of people in here with a lot of love. I've had to sleep on people's couches. I've rented a lot of rooms. I've got a lot of roommates. Tried to make this program work. And there's a lot of people that love me here, and it feels good. And I'm battling on coming back or staying in Colorado, and I just miss my group. I miss my people here. Like Danielle says, the book, The Power and the People, and it's all here for me. So I'm coming to a decision that I'm going to have to make, and it's hard. But I know I got to do a lot of writing and a lot of talking and a lot of praying and ask God to help me to figure out what I want to do. And I was really nervous, and it just seemed to come together. Couldn't think about what I was going to say up here tonight because I had my daughter to deal with, and so I guess that was good. And my 10 minutes is up, so thanks.
Hi, my name's Pamela, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Ooh, good to be here. Always honor and a privilege to be at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and be asked to come and share my experience, strength, and hope in my home group. Real awesome deal. You know, Saturday Night Live saved my life, and this is my home group, and I'm very grateful that it's here. So, it's been quite a journey. You know, I don't know a lot. I don't remember a lot about my childhood, but I do remember that there were some good times and that there were some different times. I thought my family was real normal, it didn't seem to be that strange. Until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard that buzzword, dysfunctional. Until then, I didn't really realize that I lived in a dysfunctional home. You know, it was normal. And none of that has anything to do with why I'm an alcoholic. There's a lot of alcoholism in my family. My grandmother was an alcoholic. My My mother's an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic. And I imagine that his father was too. And that's about all I know about you know, alcoholism in my family, is that I have a lot of alcoholics in my family. And drinking was always just part of the way I grew up, you know. And it was okay. But anyway, I know that when I was a small child, for some reason, I was always afraid. You know, I grew up in a lot of fear, and I'm not sure why that happened. We moved around a lot. It seemed like every time I got involved in one school, it would be time to move on, and then I'd have to go make friends all over. And that was really frightening as a kid. I hated it, and it happened year after year after year. My mother got married a lot. Got divorced a lot, too. But that was part of the reason why we were always moving, you know. So every time I'd get comfortable in a school situation and I'd make these friends, it'd be time to move on, and I'd have to go and I'd have to start all over again. And that was really hard, you know. Kids can be really mean. And when I was really little, I had crooked teeth and I needed braces and I got made fun of. And when I got braces, they still made fun of me because I had braces. It was like a never-ending battle. I hated school. I didn't do well in it. A lot of that had to do with the moving around a lot. You know, it cracks me up that I can stand up here tonight and share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you're looking at a kid that could not go to school and do an oral book report to save her life. I mean, I got sick. If I had to pretend like I was sick for a week so I could get out of having to do that, that's what I did. And you know, I learned at a really young age how to con and manipulate, and I did it well. And I carried that on all through my adult years until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, what happened for me is that, you know, I grew up in a, like I said, a family where alcohol was acceptable. And when I got into, you know, junior high school, 7th, 8th grade, and those peers that I wanted to be accepted by were drinking and smoking cigarettes and, you know, whatever. I needed to do that so I could be part of. And you know, it started with smoking cigarettes in the creek, and then pretty soon we're drinking a little Red Mountain wine, and, you know, I'm going to school, and people are doing things like taking, and, you know, so, you know, I'm trying it, you know, and it's okay. And one day this guy comes to school, and he's got these red capsules, and he hands out, you know, 4 or 5 red capsules to everybody. And you know, being the good alcoholic that I was, even though I didn't know it at the time, I took 4 reds, and I went to P.E. Needless to say, I got busted. Didn't do really good, and they hauled me off to the office. And you know, this was 8th grade. They hauled me off to the office, and somehow, I have no idea, I conned and manipulated my way into them not telling my mom until Monday. I don't know what the deal was. My mom was at work. They couldn't get a hold of her or something, so they took me home, and they told my neighbor. Well, then I conned and manipulated my neighbor into not telling my mom until Monday, because I had to go to a party. And if mom found out, that wasn't going to happen. So I manipulated my way out of that one, and I went on, and I went to my party, and I did what I did that weekend. And, you know, Monday rolled around, and they had to tell my mom. And she wasn't real happy. She didn't take it real well. And that night, I came home from school, and of course, she's livid. You know, she sends me to my room, and she comes, she goes over to the neighbors, and she comes back, and she says she called the police. You know, we're talking, you know, 3 or 4 days later, and she called the police, and they're going to come over. And so I go in my room, and I'm talking on the phone, and I'm like, you know, called the damn pigs on me, and She was listening at the door. Well, the door flies open. She comes in, and bam, I'm knocked down on the ground. Black eye, clear out to here. And, I knew at that moment that I had to go. You know, I knew at that moment that I wasn't going to stay in that house for very long. And that didn't stop me. What happened was I went on to high school, and sometimes I showed up, sometimes I didn't. And at age 15, I decided that I would, I got into some trouble at age 15. And instead of telling this woman who might give me a black eye, I decided it'd be better to just run away to Alaska. So I had this boyfriend, and he arranged for us to get these tickets to go to Alaska and work in a shrimp cannery. And believe it or not, at the age of 15, I hopped on an airplane and went to Alaska. And we got these jobs in the shrimp cannery. Oh, that's a wonderful job. But glorious. And working graveyard in a shrimp cannery and living in Quonset huts. And, trying to get loaded, when we could. And, thank God I got busted about 3 months later. I was tired of that. And they dragged me back to California, and I looked my mom in the eye when I got off the plane that night, and I said, you know what, I can't live with you. I can't do it. And I decided that I'd go live with this boyfriend's parents in Felton. And she agreed to it, and I went up there, and, it was the same old story, my actions and my behavior didn't go over real well up there either. And, by the time the summer was over, they asked me to leave. And I didn't know it at the time that it was my problems that was making my life so miserable. It was them, and it was the situation, and it was the place I was living, and it never had anything to do with me. It was always them. And my mom shipped me off to my aunt and uncle's house in Colorado Springs. I stayed there for a couple months. I enrolled in school. And by the time snow fell, the boyfriend showed up. And I got in some more trouble. And I got to run again. So this time, we decided we'd just get married. And I'm 16 years old. And I call my mom and I tell her I want to get married. And she's freaking out. And my grandmother's going, just want her get married. At least we'll know where the heck she is. So I married this man, and we came back to California, and, we got an apartment, and he had a job, and he worked for his father, and I was working at Dairy Bell. It was another one of my glamorous jobs. And I was 16 years old, and I was trying to go to school, and I was trying to be a wife, and I was trying to do all this stuff, and I was trying to get loaded, and my life was just so miserable. And God, I haven't thought about that in a long time. Anyway, this was like a disaster marriage, and it lasted a whole year and a half. And what happened was we got in one more argument, and I left, or he left. I really don't remember who left. But, I just moved on to the next one. By the end of the weekend, I had a new boyfriend, and I was moving him in and him out. And, I was on a roll one more time. And that's how my life proceeded to go on for quite some time. And you know what I remember is that I remember when that marriage broke up, and I hadn't thought about this in a long time because I really thought I really didn't get into my alcoholism until I was a little bit older. But I was thinking about it the other day, and, when that marriage broke up and I was 16 years old, that's when I really started drinking because I didn't know how to deal with the pain of being alone. Here I was, 16 years old, all by myself. I can't go back to Mom, because Mom told me when I left, it's fine if you leave, but don't ever come back. And it's like, I believed her. I'm sure she probably didn't mean that, but I really didn't want to go back. So I got into the disease just a little bit more, and it continued to be that way, until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also found out I was pregnant when I left this man, that child. And and that's a trip, being 17 years old and having a baby. That is a trip. I don't suggest it. But I did it, and so now I got to go back to school because I don't have any high school education, and you know I'm working at Dairy Bell, and so I go back to school, and I'm trying to get loaded, and I'm trying to raise this kid, and you know what? It's really sad what this disease does to our families. When I was pregnant with my first child, I didn't know that you weren't supposed to drink when you were pregnant. And I had friends that would come over in the middle of the night and bring the tequila and the pot, and you know, we'd sit around and drink tequila and smoke pot. And I had no idea that I was harming that child at that time. I knew that I shouldn't do any drugs. You know, I knew that that was wrong. I couldn't take any LSD. I couldn't do any crank. I couldn't do any whites. But I had no idea that marijuana or alcohol might harm that child. And I got loaded on pot, and I drank a lot of tequila when I was pregnant. And that's really hard to tell people, you know, even in an Alcoholics Anonymous all these years. That's a really hard thing to admit, because that child was born, and even though I didn't know it for a long time, he ended up having a lot of learning disabilities. And I don't know if that's directly related to my drinking, but I imagine it is. And that's hard to admit. But anyway, I had this child, and I ended up, you know, didn't do any drugs when I was pregnant, okay? So I'm like not an addict. I don't have a problem with alcohol or drugs. And I decided that I was going to breastfeed him. Well, you know you can't drink, and I know I couldn't drink if I was breastfeeding, and I knew I couldn't do any drugs. But I had heard that if you breastfed for the first 3 months, that was all that the baby really needed. So boy, at 3 months, I was like, okay, I'm ready to get loaded. You know, and I made a conscious decision one day, you know, just like that, that it was time, you know, and I went and I got the formula, and I put him on the formula, and off I went. Off I went, and I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but drugs are a big part of my story. And I don't know if drugs kept me out there longer or if they got me here faster. I haven't figured that one out yet. Because my drug of choice was speed, and if I just drank and did a lot of speed, you know, I always had that happy medium going. So anyway, I ended up getting married again. I had another baby, and I'm doing the same thing all over again. And this is how my life continued to go. I continued to get married, get in a relationship, get a divorce, get out of a relationship, have a baby, get a job, get loaded. And I mean, gosh, you'd think I'd get a clue, but it just seems so normal to me to live this way. I had no idea that I was doing anything out of the ordinary. So I had my second child in 1981, and that was, I don't know, some of you might remember, in 1980, 1981, we had a little bit of a recession in California, and I had been working in an electronics company at the time. And I had a pretty decent job. I had to, because I always married men that didn't work. And and there was a bit of a recession on, and after I had the child, there was no place for me to go back into this position. So I decided that I'd just, you know, do what I could, you know, to make it and maybe spend some time with this kid. My first one, I didn't have that opportunity. I had to go back to school, and he was in daycare from the time he was an infant. So, you know, I had one more bright idea, and I decided that I'd just hotel waitress at night and stay at home all day with the kids. And I got a job at Alex's 49er. It was a glamorous job. I had a glamorous job. I didn't realize I had so many glamorous jobs. But, you know, that's where my alcoholism really took off. Started having blackouts. I'd get off at work. I cocktailed from 3:30 until like 6, Monday through Thursday, and then on Friday I cocktailed from 3:30 until 9. And it would be like, at Alex's you can drink when you're working. And that was pretty cool. And I'd get off work at 6 or at 9, it didn't matter. And I'd always gonna have one drink, you know, or maybe two. And the next thing I would know, it would be 2 in the morning, you know, or it would be 1 in the morning, and the phone was ringing, and it's like, if it's my husband, I'm not here, you know. And that's when the insanity really got bad for me. And I remember it took me a long time. It took me from 1981 until 1985 to get off Bascom Avenue. I couldn't get off Bascom Avenue. You know, I lived on this really glamorous street called Ravens Court. Some of you may know it. And I couldn't get out of there, you know. And I didn't have a car, so I just took a taxi from one bar to the next, you know, up and down Bascom Avenue. Normandy House, Alex's 49er, you know, all those wonderful bars, Murray's. Gosh. You know, and I hated my life. Most of it was in a blackout. A lot of things I didn't like, and I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop. And you know, I don't know what happened. You know, I seemed to, you know, have periods of my life where it was really, really bad, and then I'd pull myself together for a short period of time. And in 1985, I decided I had had enough, and the recession was kind of letting up, and so I went out and I looked for another job in electronics. I used to call it a real job. You know, time to go get a real job. And I ended up getting a real job, and I decided to get rid of the husband, you know, because he wasn't working, and I was tired of supporting his butt. And so I kicked him out, and I went and I got a real job in electronics one more time, and I got the car back, and I got all the stuff, you know. And I always got job, you know. I always ended up working with people that were just like me, and it was great. At this point in my life, I got heavily involved in cocaine and sales of cocaine, and I would go to work at this electronics company, and every Monday we would have meetings in the president's office, and I'd be there with my little suit on, and, you know, in my coat pocket I'd have, you know, 15 or 20 quarters of cocaine. And after the meeting, I'd walk around the building and distribute it and then go back to my desk and, you know, or go to my boss's office, and we'd lock the door and do some lines, and then we'd head for the bar. We worked stuff. This building was 4 doors down from the Sunnyvale Golf Course. So, you know, 11 o'clock, we're on our way down to the golf course, and we're coming back at 2. You know, and that went on for a long time. A long time. And, you know, I don't understand why people didn't, I don't understand why they didn't get fired. Well, the boss was getting loaded with me, but there were people above her, you know. It just amazes me. But what happened was I started getting real paranoid. And, you know, things were happening, like my mother was telling my oldest son to go home and look for drugs. And and so he'd find them, call her and tell her, and then she'd come over freaking out, and I'd call him a liar, and oh, my life is turning into a disaster. So I decided I knew what my problem was. It was the cocaine, and I couldn't do it anymore. So I made one more conscious decision that I wasn't going to do cocaine anymore, and I headed for the crank connection job. And I wasn't an addict, you know. And deep down inside of my heart, I believed that I was not an addict. So I just kept doing cocaine, and I'm on my way one more time, you know. And that's just how it continued to go. You know, I ended up getting laid off from that job, and I got another job a couple months later at another company doing pretty much the same thing. And I don't know. I met one more Mr. Wright, and God, I'm really scattered tonight. going to go on to my last 2 years of drinking, because even though I know that I was a daily drinker and a daily user for a long time, you know, my alcoholism and my drug addiction lasted 20 years. And that still blows my mind today. But the last 2 years of my drinking and using are what got me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was I met this man who was, he worked. I met a man that worked. No, that was something new. But he was a hopeless, helpless alcoholic just like I was, only I didn't know it. And he was into all these different religions, and I've talked about this before. But he was the only person that I had ever gone out with that actually questioned my drinking. You know, he would say things like, I don't want to die on a bar stool. Don't you think you drink too much? Like, you know, and every now and then he'd go, well, we're not going to drink anymore. You know, let's quit for a week. And I'd be like, why? Why would you want to? But but he was into all these religions, and he was into Vedantism and Buddhism and Hinduism, and he had all these books, thousands and thousands of books, and he used to talk about the secret. The secret was in these books. And, you know, I figured that, you know, because he didn't want to drink, the secret we were looking for was how we don't drink and how our lives get better. I wasn't really sure. But I would sit there and read these books hour upon hour. You know, I'd be doing lines of crank and drinking tequila and reading these books looking for this damn secret. And I couldn't find it. I could hardly read the damn Indian words. But, and then I would do really strange things like get up at 4 in the morning and do large lines of crank and go out in the living room, light the candles and the incense and try to meditate in front of Buddha. And that wasn't working real well. So one day I'm getting ready for work and the TV's on and it's the 700 Club and I hear Ben talking about how these lives have been restored to sanity, and that if you just pray this simple prayer with him, that you too can be relieved from the bondages of alcohol and drugs. And they would show these families who had recovered and how they were living these wonderful lives. And I touched the TV and I'd pray with Ben, and I'd end up being late for work, and you know, nothing was happening, or at least I didn't think anything was happening. What I didn't know was that the drugs and the alcohol had blocked me from the sunlight of the spirit. But something was happening. I wasn't aware of it. And I wouldn't be aware of it for, you know, a couple more years. Anyway, this man had to go to New York because his sister was dying of cancer. And he took off, and somebody broke into my house and raped me in the middle of the night. And that was devastating. It was really devastating, and this man ended up going to prison, and what happened was I jumped into the tequila bottle, and I wanted to die, and I didn't know how to get rid of the pain, and I was afraid, and I didn't know if they were going to let him out, and if he was going to come back and kill me, and I mean, my mind was just going, and I was nuts, and for 2 weeks, I took a medical leave of absence from work, and for 2 weeks, I stayed in my house, and I drank all day. And about 5 o'clock in the evening, I'd jump in the shower, and I'd put on my makeup, and I'd pretend like I was okay, and I'd go down to the bar, and I'd hang out for a few hours, and then I'd stop at the liquor store, and I'd do it over and over and over for 2 weeks straight. And at the end of 2 weeks, I knew that I was either going to kill myself or I was going to have to go get help. And I didn't know alcohol had anything to do with this. I really thought I was losing my mind. I thought I was nuts. I thought I'd been nuts for a long time. This had just set me off the edge. And so I drove myself to El Camino Hospital, and I checked myself into the psych ward. And you know, when I was in there, I told those people that I drank every day, and I told them about my drug addiction, and told them about a lot of things. And they said, well, you know, they said, take these antidepressants, stay here, and you know, work on what's going on now. Now, this is what I think they said. They may have said, Pamela, you're an alcoholic, and you've just been through a terrible thing, and, you know. But my mind, the way I remember it, and if I would have known I was going to be here, I would have taken better notes. But, you know, my mind, I'm pretty sure that they just skipped over that alcoholism part, and they gave me these antidepressants, and I stayed there for 2 weeks, and I didn't go to any of the classes that they had. I didn't go to any of the therapy. You know, one more time, I'm conning and manipulating my way out of everything that they have to offer that's going to help me get through this. And I even got out on a pass and got loaded and conned and manipulated my way into not having to get kicked out. And that's like a no-no. If you drink or get loaded on a pass, you are kicked out automatically. And somehow I didn't get kicked out. And somehow my drinking didn't even seem to enter any of the conversations. Although, when I was being released, they did send somebody down from the drug and alcohol center to talk to me. And it was very fortunate for me that my insurance had run out and there was no way that I could go into that program. And I think I told the guy, well, I'll just go out and, you know, control my drinking. One margarita, and I got a job. You know, so I'm right where I need to be one more time. And my job that I had taken the 2 week leave of absence from, they had fired me when I was in the hospital. They had had enough of my crises. See, I was a crisis queen when I was out there. And I was. And in my early drinking, the crises were really more fantasy or lies to either get out of work or, you know, being on time or whatever. But towards the end, my crises started to be real crises. And what they told me was, you know, you do great work when you're here, but you're just never here. And this company had a policy where people that were on salary had unlimited sick time. They changed that policy because of me. Don't ever give unlimited sick time to an alcoholic of my type. I got paid for a whole summer once and wasn't even there. And that's no lie. Anyway, I got out of this hospital, like I said, and, you know, for a couple hours I tried to control the drinking. I had the margarita, I got the job, and I went home. And, you know, it was like, okay, I'm safe now, I'm home. I won't drink anymore tonight. And the next day I went to work. Well, the next day was 4th of July, and I went and I did my shift, and when I got off, I was all alone. You know, my oldest son was in an institution. Now he was suicidal. He was 12 years old. That probably had something to do with my alcoholism. My youngest son was almost five, and he was afraid. You know, he was there when that man broke into our home, and he was afraid, and he wanted to go live with his grandma for a while, so that's where he went. And I walked into that house, and I was alone, and I was afraid, and one more time, and you know, I changed my clothes and I went to the bar. Well, this particular night I went to the bar, I walked in and, you know, Prince Charming was there one more time. And, you know, I had another hostage, basically. Or he had another hostage. I'm not sure who had who. But what I know is I told this man about my situation, you know, my latest crisis. And he said, come with me to San Carlos, where it's really mellow, and, you know, you don't have to pay rent, and just, you know, get better. And I was like, wow, this was really unusual because, like I told you, all the men I was ever with never had jobs. And the one that did made me pay half of the rent. So this was like a real new deal. And I moved to San Carlos, and it is very peaceful and serene up there, and I did get some serenity. But my drinking and my using really progressed when I was up there. And a lot of that is because my children weren't with me and I had an out. You know, I didn't have to be responsible. And anyway, so I'm living in San Carlos. I'm working in the bar. And going on for a while, and this man's a hopeless, helpless alcoholic just like I am. And the disease is getting real crazy by now. I'm using, I'm dealing, I'm drinking, I'm hanging out in the bars. I love the bars, you know. Something about the music and the mirrors and, you know, the smoke and the atmosphere. And I always felt at home in the bars, and I always had a home bar, you know, a bar where I was at all the time. Kind of like a home group. Anyway, you know, this relationship was getting real sick, and I remember I was always really, really concerned about this man's alcoholism because he was really a drunk. And, you know, he was the kind that walked, you know, wobbly when he drank. And I didn't do that very often, you know. But, you know, I was putting a lot of other chemicals in my body. And so I was really concerned about this man's alcoholism. And for about a year, I tried to get him to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, not even really knowing what Alcoholics Anonymous was. And he was really worried about my alcoholism, and he was trying to get me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember one day I was really fed up, and, you know, you never want to lose them, so if going to Alcoholics Anonymous might keep them around a little longer, then that's what you do. You know, so I called probably central office in San Carlos, and they told me where there was a noon meeting. And I went to that noon meeting to please this man. I had no intention of staying. And it was a brown bag meeting. These little old ladies and little old men were in there eating their brown bag lunch and having this meeting. And I don't know if they asked for visitors or newcomers, but I stood up and said, my name's Pamela, and I probably didn't say I was an alcoholic because I didn't think I was. And after the meeting, somebody came up to me and they asked me how long I had been in the program. And I was like, I've never been here in my life. This is the first time I've ever been here. And now I thought he said, well, then you must not be an alcoholic because you stood up and introduced yourself at your first meeting. Now, I'm sure that's not what he said. I'm sure that was just my denial. So I left that meeting thinking I wasn't an alcoholic, and I continued to drink for another year. Well, this relationship got, you know, like I said, pretty crazy. You know, and I can't believe what I did when I was out there and the situations that I put myself in. This man came home in a blackout one night and put a gun down my throat in a blackout, and I stayed. You know, I stayed in that relationship. That scares me today. You know, today I don't have to live like that. I ended up moving back to Santa Clara, and I was still seeing this man, and my life was getting really, really unmanageable. The company that had fired me when I was in the psychiatric ward hired me back for some strange reason. And I was working there, and I was putting in a lot of hours, and I was dealing on the side, and you know, I couldn't pay my rent. You know, I was making good money. And it was all going to alcohol and drugs. And I had one more bright idea, and I made a conscious decision that I would check into being a call girl. And that's how sick I started to get. And I made a phone call, and I went on an interview, and they hired me. And see, I didn't come from that. That wasn't me. You know, but alcohol allowed me to do things like that. And I went out on these calls. I went out on two or three calls, and I was dying inside. I couldn't stand what I had become, and I didn't know how not to do it. And I had to drink a quart of tequila before I went in, and a half pint when I walked out. And I, you know, one more time, I was either going to kill myself or I was going to get help. And I made a decision. I talked to a friend, and she shared with me, for the first time in my life, I heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. She shared with me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because she had been in a 30-day program before. She didn't stay. She knew she had, you know, the seed had been planted in her, and she shared that with me. And this was in November of 1988, and I decided that on January 1, I'd go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't going to give up those holiday parties. There was absolutely no way. that seemed totally inconceivable to me. So I made a decision that on January 1 I would go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was on Christmas Day, this man called me from San Carlos, and he was really loaded, and he asked me to come pick him up. And I drove to San Carlos, and I picked him up, and on the way home, he tried to jump out of the car on 101. And I took him home, and I tucked him in, and the next morning, I told him, I announced, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and don't you think you have a problem, too? And the miracle had been happening for a long time. It started way back when I was touching that TV praying with Ben, only I didn't know it. And he said, yeah, I do, and he asked me to get him into a treatment program, and I put him into a hospital on the 28th of December, 1988, and I went out and I did what I needed to do until the 1st of January. I scored as much crank as I could. I got as much tequila in my apartment, and I drank, and I used, and I did what I needed to do until the 1st of January, and that blows people's minds that I set a date, and I came into these rooms, and I've stayed here ever since. And on January 1, I celebrated 5 years of sobriety. And that's just a miracle. So I actually went to an NA meeting first, because I really wasn't sure I was, ready to give up the alcohol. I knew I could give up the drugs because that was illegal and stuff, but God, you have to quit drinking too. So I went to this NA meeting, and they promptly told me that alcohol was a drug and that it was a program of total abstinence. And for some reason, I believed them. And the next night, we went to an AA meeting, and I started to hear things like, God couldn't, what if he were sought? I heard that there is only one power, that one is God, may you find him now. And I had been looking for God for a long time. What I didn't know is that he had been with me for a long time. When I heard those things, I knew I was home, and I knew I could stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the miracle started to happen. And today I know that, you can't get to where I am today from where I came from without the power and the magic of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so very grateful, that I got the chance to come here and find that out. I have a loving God in my life today, and I know I couldn't do it without a loving God. My life is incredible, absolutely incredible. And it's been quite a journey. When I had 30 days of sobriety, I remember I had heard, don't go to Saturday Night Live, it's the meat market. Well, you know how it is. You don't ever tell an alcoholic don't do something because they're going to do it. And I couldn't wait to get my butt down to Saturday Night Live. And I lived in Sunnyvale, or Santa Clara at the time. So I went to a lot, my first 30 days, I went to a lot of Santa Clara, Sunnyvale meeting. And it seemed like such a journey to go to Campbell. But anyway, one night I was supposed to meet this girl who had carried the message to me, who was my running partner. And she came in, she probably went to meetings with me for the first 28 days. Every day we went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or CA or AA or NA. It really didn't matter. We just showed up at one of them. And she was supposed to meet me at Saturday Night Live. I think I had 31 days. And she didn't show up. And I'll never forget walking into that room. You had to walk up these steps. And then you had to open this door. And then you had to walk down these steps. And it was like I opened the door. My head was down. And I looked around. I kind of looked at all the people, and it was like, oh, my God, can I make the next step? Because I was afraid when I got here. And there might be someone in the room tonight who feels like that. I was terrified of you people, but I wanted what you had. And I knew that I had to do the footwork, and that meant that sometimes I had to walk through uncomfortable situations. And I walked through that door that night, and I identified, I identified with the people, and I identified with the stories. Saturday Night Live became my home group, and I moved to Campbell. So I didn't have to venture out every night. And a lot of things happened for me in my first couple years of sobriety. I knew I was an alcoholic when I got here. It was no surprise to me that my life was unmanageable once I sat down and looked at it. And I'll never forget the first time I sat down and I really started reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was reading more on alcoholism. And I started to identify with what the big book was talking about, and it was like for the first time in my life, I heard and I felt what I had been going through for years and years and years. And that's when I came to believe that I was an alcoholic and that my life was unmanageable. But anyway, lost my train of thought again. I was going to tell you about when I had this 69 Camaro when I got here. And it was a great car, and I really liked this car. And this boyfriend that I had, for some reason, talked me into selling it. He decided that it was going to, you know, I needed to put a lot of money in it if I was going to keep it, and I might as well just sell it and get something that was more reasonable. And I was like, God, okay. So I put the for sale sign on it, and I went to work the next day, and this girl asked me about my car. She started asking me about my car, and I was like, well, it's for sale. She's like, you're kidding. I've been looking for one all weekend, and I can't find one that's as good as yours. How much do you want? And I had paid $1,500 for it, like, months prior to that, and he had told me ask for $2,000. So I told her I wanted $2,000. She goes, well, if I give you $1,000 now, can I test drive it tomorrow morning? And then if I want it, I'll give you the other $1,000, and then you can just drive it for a week while you look for a new car. I was like, my head was swimming. It was like, this can't be happening, you know. And so she ended up buying this car. She gave me the cash, let me keep the car for a week. And this boyfriend I had said, don't worry about it, I'll help you buy a car. Well, I had never gone out and bought a car on my own. Not really. And we ended up getting this huge fight, and, you know, now it's Friday, and I'm driving her car, and I've got the cash, and I need a car in 2 days. And I'm like, I remember hearing in the meetings, you know, let go and let God, you know, turn it over, trust in God, do the footwork, all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, got down on my knees. I started praying. I'm like, okay, God, I don't know how to do this. You know, just help me, guide me, show me the way, whatever, you know. I'm sure it was a lot compared to what I was used to, because when I got here, about all I knew about was prayer, was what I heard in the meetings. And what I heard was, if you don't know how to pray in the morning, just ask God, please help you, don't take nothing today, and at night say thank you. You know, and that's all I knew how to do. So I got down on my knees, and for the first time, I really talked to God, and I really asked him to help me and guide me. And then I got up, and I knew I had to do the footwork. So for me, doing the footwork was to drive down El Camino on my way to work that day and look at the used car lots. Well, on the way down El Camino, I saw this cute little white car up on a rack, and I pulled over. I got out of my car, and I'm looking at this car, and I hear this voice from behind me go, Miss, may I help you? Turned around, and it's the same man that chaired my 30th day of sobriety meeting and had called on me, and it was like, this is the God thing. You know? And I was so excited. I was so excited, and I bought that car, and it was a great little car. And I needed those things to happen to me in, you know, early in sobriety, because I didn't know that I could trust in God until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you might call that a burning bush or whatever, you know, but that was what God did for me to allow me to stay here. And a lot of things like that happened early in sobriety. And it was fun, you know. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was like Miss Rah-Rah Sobriety, and I drove my friends nuts because I wanted them all to get sober. I was like, come on, you guys, look what I found. And they're like, get out of my face. I don't want anything to do with it. It was awesome. It was awesome. So, anyway, you know, they told me get a book. I had the book. That was another God thing. I had had that book for a while. I just didn't know it was an Alcoholics Anonymous book, and I remember they kept saying, get a book, get a book, and something made me think, you know, I think I have one of those somewhere. And I went digging through my books, and sure enough, I had a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a friend had given it to me a couple years prior to that. and his mother had given it to him when he was having a problem with drinking. And inside of it, it said, read the stories, edit, and don't ever push this on anybody. And, you know, he didn't. He gave me the book, and he said, you might want this sometime. And sure enough, I did. So they said, get the book. I had the book. They said, get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor. That was the scariest thing I had to do, get a sponsor. And I got this woman, and I was afraid to death of her. And I'd show up at meetings, and I didn't want her to see me because I was afraid she was going to talk to me. I was scared to death. And she ended up firing me. I was heartbroken, but I stayed. You know, I stayed because I wanted what you people had. And so I just, you know, for a long time, for 2 years of sobriety, I just showed up in meetings. I listened to what you people had to say, and I took it home, and I practiced the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I heard somebody say the other night, 90% of this deal is suiting up and showing up, you know, and that's all I was able to do when I got here. It took me 2 years to get a sponsor and be willing to really go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And once I did that, I'll tell you what, I was set free, but I had to be willing. And what happened was one more time, my butt was up against the wall. It was either do it or die, and I got into third step prayer. And I started doing the third step prayer on a daily basis, for days and days and days. And what happened was God started putting women in my life. I mean, they were coming out of the woodwork. And, you know, I got my first baby. She was given to me by some men in this program. And what happened was I had to work the steps, you know, because now I had somebody that I was sponsoring. And, yeah, I had worked the steps before, kind of, sort of, you know, just enough to keep me here. It was time to really get down to business. So I had asked this woman to be my sponsor, you know, probably 6 months before I called her and said, okay, I'm ready to really work these steps. You know, and she was really glad to hear from me. And so I showed up at her house every day, or not every day, but once a week. At a certain time, I showed up at her house, and we went through the steps. And I remember, I'll never forget when she had me write out my concept of God. And I went home and I wrote out this concept of God, and I couldn't believe that over the 2 years that I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous, the beautiful concept of God that I had developed. It was not the concept of God that I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with. It wasn't a punishing God anymore. It was a very loving God, a God that I could almost touch and feel. And she taught me how to meditate, and she taught me how to crawl into God's arms and just let Him hold me, you know. And I've learned how to do that. And since then, I've moved on to another sponsor who's given me a lot. Sponsorship is so important. You know, if you don't have a sponsor, I strongly suggest that you get one. I don't know. For me, it's been a process of uncover, discover, and discard. And, you know, it's a peeling of the onion. It didn't happen all at once. It continues to happen. The longer I stay here, the more I uncover. The more I discover, and the more I discard, and the more I grow, the more I grow in the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you the life I have today. It is just so rewarding. I have a wonderful job today. It just blows my mind. You know, I just recently moved into a different department. There's been a lot of changes at my company. I've had two new bosses in the last 3 months. And the boss that I'm reporting to now has just been promoted to a director's position. And he's talking about making me a manager. You know, and that's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I got a sizable raise for transferring departments. And, you know, that's another blessing of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because today I'm a worker among workers. You know, I suit up and I show up on a daily basis. I'm not late for work. I don't call in with crises anymore. And I have a good attitude when I'm at work. Now, that took a while in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember when I had a year of sobriety, I was still a tornado at work. And I was working at this one company, and I was a year sober, and I thought I was so wonderful, and this girl called and asked me a question, and she pissed me off. And I told her to F off, and I hung up the phone. I was like, whoa, where did that come from? You know, and you know what? It wasn't comfortable anymore to act like that. And I didn't know that I was like that. That's the kind of person that I was at a year of sobriety. So I had to, I had to take someone from Alcoholics Anonymous to work with me, and I took Vixie to work with me. You know, because I did. Vixie, you know, I was walking into work going, welcome to another day in paradise. God loves you, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's like my attitude changed. My attitude changed. You know, I heard Al Bennett used to say, fake it till you make it. You know, a lot of people don't agree with that, but there are some parts of my life that I've had to do that with, and that was one of them. I was miserable in that job, and I had to pretend like I was loving it. And before I knew it, I did love it. And, you know, I ended up, when I left that job, I had VPs and founders networking in the Santa Clara County Valley to help me find a new job. That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't get to where I am today from where I came from except for the power and the magic of the 12 steps. And I know that today. I have two beautiful children. You know, one is a practicing alcoholic. He doesn't think he is, and I don't judge. But I'm his mom. You know, and the other one, you know, the little one, he is an alcoholic waiting to happen, only he's been around these rooms for a long time. And, you know, hopefully he'll get to miss that. Hopefully he'll get to miss that. I'll never forget when I had when I picked up my 30-day chip. He looked at me and he said, Mom, can I get a 7-year chip? And the guy next to me said, you ought to let him get one because he's put up with your bullshit for 7 years. You know? You know, he's grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and every now and then he'll tell me it's okay for him to tell a little lie because I'm not in that program, Mom. You know, but he knows that his mom can't tell lies today, and he knows that his mom practices principles, and it's a trip, growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to welcome the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you heard something tonight that will allow you to stay in these rooms, because I don't know about you, but I was dying when I was out there. Dying. And my life is rich and meaningful today. I have a wealth of friends. I have a wonderful job. And I have a peace that I have never known in my whole life. I walk around today pretty comfortable in my skin. And I didn't come in that way. When I came in to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't even look you guys in the eyes. You know, I sat in the back of the room and I listened. And today I can come in here glad, mad, or sad. And most of the time I'm pretty happy. You know, quit smoking 2 weeks ago, and it's been a rough 2 weeks. I had a puff tonight, though. I have to tell the truth. Man, I didn't know you could go through that kind of rage. I've been raging for 2 weeks. It's like, wow, there's no alcohol, there's no drugs, there's no sex, there's no cigarettes. But I've never been happier. Go figure. Go figure. Go figure. I don't know. They told me when I got here, if you don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk. If you don't get drunk, you won't miss the miracle. You know, and there's a lot of miracles here if you just stick around. You just stick around and do the few things that are suggested in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, your life will get different. And I bet it'll get better different. Thanks.